Good morning and welcome to Words That Matter, a modern day book club. I'm your host, Lee Smith. We have a very special show this morning. The author of a national bestseller now. The book is The Parent Revolution, Rescuing Your Kids from the Radicals Ruining Our Schools. The author, he's been with us before and it's so terrific to have him back. Corey DeAngelis. Corey, welcome. Congratulations. And if you could start by telling us, so your book's a national bestseller. Now, to what extent is this riding off of the massive wave created by the recent endorsement from the 45th President of the United States and GOP frontrunner for the 2024 race, Donald J. Trump? I saw that on Truth Social and I was thrilled for you. I'm like, yeah, we got him coming on the show. So what happened after that, after he posted it on Truth Social?
Yeah, that absolutely helped. I'm truly honored that President Trump endorsed the book, and the radical left is losing their minds because they're losing control over the minds of other people's children. I also have an endorsement on the back from Senator Ted Cruz from Texas, who says, quote, "You can ruin Randy Weingarten's day by reading this book." I actually dedicated it to the teachers unions and Randy Weingarten for overplaying their hand and sparking a parent revolution. It's absolutely glorious. We're winning so much now. I'm almost getting tired of winning. We're not done yet.
I'm going to guess that you probably haven't heard from Randy Weingarten. She's probably not thanking you because, you dedicated to her. And the teachers unions for overplaying their hand. So I'm going to assume that if you've had any response from the teachers unions, from the, what would we call it, the educational establishment, they're not entirely happy with the book, with your success.
No, they're losing their minds again. There was a teachers union boss in Wisconsin actually called to burn the book. Yes, the same yahoos who are calling us wow. book banners for wanting age-appropriate content in public school libraries, they're actually calling to burn books that they disagree with for adults. So it's Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. Wow. They're doing, accusing everyone else of what they are doing themselves. And actually, Stacey Davis Gates, the Chicago Teachers Union boss, yes, the same union that deleted a tweet saying that the push to reopen schools is rooted in sexism, racism, and misogyny. Their boss, who I just found out recently, sent her own kid to private school after calling school choice racist just a year ago. I mean, it's just total hypocrisy. She sent the book back to me. So I don't know if it was above their reading level. I don't know if it was...
Wait, what do you mean she sent it back to you? Had you sent her a copy?
Sent her a copy. Oh. Again, I thanked her as well for overplaying their hand. I mean, they had a board member during the COVID era vacationing in Puerto Rico, thousands of miles away, while saying they couldn't go back to work because it was too unsafe. It was all a bunch of baloney. I mean, they even created an interpretive dance video to protest going back to work. It was pathetic. I mean, if you felt sorry for the kids when it came to math and reading scores, you should really feel sorry about the kids who want those extracurriculars because they can't dance either.
Corey, I think that one of the reasons that you're having such success and that your initiatives, what you're promoting, are having such success is because you have a good sense of humor and you're enjoying this fight. That you're in there, you're enjoying it. You like partnering with good allies like Donald Trump, and you like fighting the right adversary. So I think that's a huge part of it.
Yeah, and if you look at the elections in Texas that just happened, there was a political earthquake recently where a lot of the anti-school choice incumbents lost their seats for voting against their own party platform issue of education freedom. And school choice has just become a political winner nationwide, too. Look at what happened with Terry McAuliffe in Virginia, the Democrat who said, "I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach." He lost to Glenn Youngkin, a Republican in a state that apparently went to Biden by 10 points the year before. Glenn Youngkin, the Republican, won on the issue of education. That was the number two issue in that election, and he won with education voters by 6 points. So it's a blueprint for political success for Republicans. It's also the right thing to do. And if the teachers unions are calling to burn this book, you probably ought to read it. But even if you don't have kids, it's called the parent revolution. Even if you don't have grandkids, this is an important fight because the radical left doesn't even have to have kids anymore, and they can still shape the direction of our country because they can infiltrate the government school system and raise other people's kids in their socialist worldview. And that's a huge problem. Conservatives and independents need to wake up right now and strike at the root of the problem. Vodi Bakum put it best. He said, "We cannot continue to send our children to Caesar for their education and be surprised when they come home as Romans." Well, the good news is, Lee, parents aren't surprised anymore. They've woken up. They're never going to unsee what they saw in 2020. And that's why I thank the teachers' unions for pushing for school closures, causing Zoom school, which was a failure, but families got to see the indoctrination as opposed to education happening in too many schools today.
So that's how the revolution starts, and that's how your book starts. You're talking about the lockdowns. You're talking about what happens with COVID-19 in 2020, and parents are alarmed, to put it lightly. What's the revolution? What happens?
Yeah, so when parents were upset, they started pushing back at school board meetings because that was kind of the idea, right? The defenders of the status quo said that public schools are accountable because you can show up at school board meetings and they'll listen to you. Well, when you're viewed as a nuisance and not a customer, when you're not a partner in the relationship, the school boards tried to label parents as domestic terrorists. Yes, the National School Boards Association actually sent a letter to Biden implying that under the Patriot Act, parents should be investigated for domestic terrorism. An earlier draft of their letter actually called for the military and the National Guard to be deployed to school board meetings to clamp down on parents who had the audacity to just want more of a say in their own kids' education. It was an attempt to bully and silence parents into submission, but thankfully their plan backfired. It's only emboldened parents to push back even harder. And so the parent revolution is a story about what they did, the dark times of COVID, and how they tried to silence parents. But it's a story of hope, too, in that it shows that when parents lock arms and band together, they can become an even more powerful union than the teachers, one for the kids. They care about their children more than anybody else, and they outnumber the employees in the system. So after that letter was sent by the NSBA, guess what? 26 states have already left the National School Boards Association. Play stupid games, win stupid prizes. And they're also, they've tried to cut off families' mics at school board meetings too. And so parents rightly understood that, hey, I should be able to take my money somewhere else so that next time I'll have more leverage in that conversation. If you can vote with your feet, the school boards will have an incentive to listen to you, to care about you. And maybe they would have been open throughout the pandemic era, like the private schools, private daycares, private businesses. In fact, in Sacramento, in California, they had a stupid health order that closed schools arbitrarily, but not daycare centers. Because COVID was smart. It knew that if you were learning, it would activate and get you. But if you were in the same building and nothing was going on, somehow you were okay. It was really courteous of a virus too, because on airplanes, it knew when you were eating and you had your mask down, it was never gonna get you because it was gonna let you take your time and eat. But that's another conversation altogether. In California, there was a private school, a Christian school, that understood this lunacy of the lockdowns, and they rebranded themselves as a daycare. They retrained all their employees as daycare workers, and so that they could open their doors for their customers. That just goes to show you the incentives are all out of whack with the government school system.
I like the way you put it in the books. I hear you saying they're customers, and that is the way you put it in the books. Like, imagine if you had to move to a different place to go to a different to go to a different restaurant, right? If there's only one restaurant in your community, and you didn't like the food, and they didn't care because that's the only show in town. So it's a very interesting point that you make, and of course, this is what, you know, this is what our system is based on. It's based on choice, it's based on opportunity, and that's how people make money, by offering choices, and that's what makes things better, right? By having competition.
That's right. And look, if you were assigned to a government grocery store, they might have empty shelves like we see in socialist countries. If they did have food, it probably would be expired. You'd get food poisoning. And if you wanted to go somewhere else, imagine if you had to pick up all your bags and move houses to be assigned to another government grocery store. That would make no sense. It would cause a lot of monopoly power, and it would be horrible for customers. And guess what the government grocery stores would say? They'd say, I know we've increased funding by 170%. Yeah. You just need more money. This is the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. But look, as I show in The Parent Revolution, the parents are fed up. And I think this is the best solution to the curriculum battles too, because the problem is that we assign millions of families to a one-size-fits-all system that by definition is never going to meet the needs of various families that just disagree about how they want to raise their children. It's okay to disagree about these things. What's not okay is you have a special interest, the teachers' unions, radical progressives that control the school system and mold the minds of other people's children. They don't want to lose their monopoly on funding, but more importantly, they don't want to lose the monopoly on the minds of other people's kids, because they know this is, look, this is, they fight school choice harder than anything else. I mean, let's be real. Even with the banning of divisive concepts in public schools, which I think is a step in the right direction, the unions don't fight that as hard because they know they can get around it. And we have found in states like my home state of Texas, other red states that have banned critical race theory, for example, we have undercover video from Accuracy in Media finding public school administrators on camera being exposed, saying that even if critical race theory is banned, they're going to do it anyway. They'll just call it social emotional learning. They'll call it student mental health services. It's a never-ending game of whack-a-mole because they can move the goalposts every step of the way, and they do. And even if it's not explicitly in the curriculum, the Marxist ideology can still be taught through that lens in other areas. So it's a huge problem. The best solution, not the only solution, but the best solution is for families to be able to say, hey, I'm getting a whiff of this happening with the classroom. My student's telling me about this. My child's telling me about this. I'm going to take my money that's meant for my child to a private school that aligns with their values, or maybe even another public school that's doing a better job. And as you said, with competition, it's a rising tide that lifts all boats. If families have a say in their kids' education, the public schools shape up fast. 26 of 29 studies find positive effects of school choice competition on the outcomes in the public schools. It's a win-win solution.
I like very much how you talk about how you, when you were a student, your school was terrible. And you had an opportunity. I mean, the stories are pretty funny. And I highly recommend our audience goes out and gets The Parent Revolution and reads it as well. Importantly, buy it, but read it as well. The stories are funny, but very telling. And you and your parents made the choice to move to a charter school, and that became your career path. Corey, we have to take a quick break. Viewers, if you're watching on YouTube, please, we're going to Epoch TV exclusively. We're going to a quick break, less than a minute. We're going to cut away. We're going to come back with Corey DeAngelis, author of The Parent Revolution. And when we do come back, Corey, I want to ask you the kinds of things that parents are actually choosing. What are the things between different private schools, charter schools, alternate public schools, and also homeschooling? I want to know what people are choosing. Mm-hmm. So does our audience. Make sure you make the jump to Epoch TV. We'll see you in about a minute.
If you send your children off to Caesar to be educated, don't be surprised if they come back Romans. If you sit your children in front of TikTok and Instagram and Facebook and whatever else, don't be surprised when your children come back distrustful of your faith, of the concept of family, hating the nation that you live in, and a whole host of other things that defy truth and beauty and goodness. After all, God gives children to parents, not to iPods or iPads, and not to government institutions or even churches. So let's tell our kids the stories and the parables that produce blessing and protection and character. We need to start on our knees and make sure that we're the ones who are the primary storytellers in our children's lives. I am hoping, together with Brave Books, to make the new Mr. Rogers Neighborhood. Think timeless, classic, moral values embedded in lessons that children will benefit from today, only greatly modernized with high energy, hilarious dialogue, beautiful animated stories about the sacredness of life, about the First and Second Amendment, about the dangers of socialism, about love, kindness, joy, and peace, about humility, about telling the truth and discerning error from reality in news headlines.
Watch us exclusively on Epoch TV and get the rest of this great conversation with the great Kirk Cameron. Thank you so much. Welcome back to Words That Matter, Modern Day Book Club. I'm your host, Lee Smith. Thank you for making the jump. You're right, not to want to miss any part of our conversation with the great Queer DeAngelis. Congratulations on your new book, The Parent Revolution, a national bestseller now. It's annoying all the right people. You have all the right adversaries and you have all the right friends and allies, Queer DeAngelis. Thank you. So, before the break, I said I want to know the kinds of choices that that parents are making. If school choice is the platform, what do people want? What do parents want? What do kids want?
It depends on the family, but there has been a mass exodus from the government school system since they overplayed their hand and fought to keep their doors closed. Families started flocking to other alternatives that were doing a better job, and families stayed there. Since the pre-pandemic levels, homeschooling has at least doubled. So we should really thank Randy Weingarten for inadvertently doing more to advance school choice and homeschooling than anyone could have ever imagined. But charter school enrollment has increased by about 7% as well. Private school enrollment, some indications suggest it's been about a 4 or 5% increase as well. So there's been a mass exodus, million kids leaving the government-run school system, and it's their own fault. They fought to keep their doors closed. And in particular, something that's been really interesting is during the school closures, families started forming something called pandemic pods. They had like 5 to 10 children together in a household. Basically, families could get together and economize on the process of homeschooling, where you don't have to build another brick and mortar school. If the government school was closed, they started doing it in households. And you can kind of think of this as a homeschool co-op or even a reimagination of the one-room schoolhouse, and it became such a threat to the government school system that the NEA, the largest teachers union in the country, they put out an opposition research sheet on one of the founders of a microschool, Kelly Smith. He founded Prenda Microschools in Arizona that are doing really well. Families are using their school choice funding through savings accounts to spend at microschools, and you can use it for homeschool curriculum as well. So the Wall Street Journal found this opposition research sheet, and the next day they put it into a headline from the editorial board. The headline was "The Teachers Union's Tiny Little Enemy." So we're shaking up the entire system, and they know that families can figure things out at a much lower cost, learn a lot more in a fraction of the time, and guess what? More of that money can go directly to the teacher. I mean, we're spending like $20,000 per kid in government schools in the U.S. If you can take that money and not have to pay for all the administrators and all the buildings, you can more directly fund teachers. They'll have a smaller class size, more autonomy. It's a win for teachers. It's a win for students at the same time. So much that the Washington Post, they actually wrote during the COVID era about a story of a New Jersey public school teacher had been in the system for decades and how great it was that she started a pandemic pod. She was making the same amount of money she was working at in the government schools for decades. She had a fraction of the class size, 10 versus 40, and a lot more autonomy, not as much red tape from the government bureaucracy. So this shouldn't be discussed as public versus private or students versus teachers. I think we should focus on the kids there. The system exists to meet their needs, not the other way around. But teachers don't get a great deal, especially the ones that are doing a good job. I mean, the unions exist to protect the lowest common denominator, and that hurts the teachers that are actually doing a good job. So have the funding follow the student, and the administrators aren't going to be happy, but the teachers will probably be happy too.
Corey, it sounds like the parent revolution is actually also, it provides an opportunity for teachers and for entrepreneurs, people who want to get in the business of education, saying, we've got a guy here where I am in South Carolina. He's had a charter school for a while. Just brilliant idea. He said, we only have space for 450 kids, but we educate 900. I'm like, he's like, how do you do it? It's like, well, we have half the kids come in from 7:30 to 11:30. The other half come in from 11:30 to 3:30. I'm like, wow, great. So there are people out there who are thinking up new ideas, how to educate students, how to make money doing it, how to make money doing something they enjoy and they think is important. So has the parent revolution, are there people out there? And also, you were just talking about individual teachers, right? I mean, if we're talking about teachers' pods, you can have someone like, yeah, I'm a specialist in science, or I know everything, I'm good at teaching reading, teaching certain books, right? Teaching adventure books for boys. So, whatever, Robert Louis Stevenson, Robert Caruso, Robinson Crusoe. Are there teachers who are teachers and educational entrepreneurs who are taking advantage of this moment too?
Yeah, absolutely. And there have been 5 studies linking school choice to salaries in the public school system of all places. All of them find evidence to suggest that school choice, more competition in the labor market and the market for goods and services, doesn't just benefit the consumers. It also benefits the employees because there's a monopsony in the labor market with K-12 education. Basically, if you want to go teach, you got to accept the benefits and pay that are provided by the government system, which may not be great for teachers doing a good job. And if you had more competition in that labor market, the funding will go towards the teachers that are doing a good job. The funding will go in the classroom, not towards administrative bloat. I mean, if you look in the U.S., I document this in the book as well, but since 2000, the number of students in the system increased by a small amount, only about 7%. But the number of administrators in the system, well, it's increased by 90%. It's become a jobs program for administrators, not an education initiative for kids. That's a huge problem. And why is that the case? They have no incentive to spend the money wisely. If they did, they would put it towards the teachers like they actually pretend to do.
Will this change? Let me back into that question. Sorry. I suspect one of the reasons that they hate you is that your enemies hate you, the educational establishment. One of the reasons, the public education establishment, one of the reasons they hate you is because the school, the unions, the teachers' unions, all these things constitute an enormous Democratic Party constituency. And insofar as you're taking away their instruments, is this going to hurt their budgets? At a certain point, are people going to have to look and go like, we're just not educating 2,000 kids a year here in this school. We've only got 600. So we're just not going to get the same budgets, and means fewer people, means a smaller constituency for the Democratic Party. Can we get to that place, or will Democratic Party officials say, I don't care how many kids are in these schools. We're going to keep paying our Democratic constituents to do Democratic Party things.
No, at some point the pressure will be so high that if you have an empty school, you should allocate those resources to schools that are open, actually serving kids. So, and the money follows the child. So that money, if you're not doing a good job and they leave the school, it goes to a different institution. We fund the kid, not the building. And that's how we ought to do it. But you hit on something that's really importantly, that the only reason that Democrats vote against school choice is all about power dynamics, nothing to do with logic or morality. They're a wholly owned subsidiary of the teachers' unions. Democrat voters support school choice in large numbers, including and also Republicans and independents. It just so happens that you have 99.97% of the campaign contributions from Randy Weingarten's union, AFT, goes to Democrats. And it's been like that for decades. It's a money laundering scheme. It ought to be illegal. It's an incestuous relationship between the government school teachers unions and the public sector, the Democratic Party. It goes to their campaign coffers. But I see a silver lining, a ray of hope in that there has been some Democrat defections on the issue. Unfortunately, politicians do respond more to power and politics than morality or logic. But because the Republicans have picked up the football and become the parents' party on the issue, some Democrats are saying, hey, I don't want to end up like Terry McAuliffe, who lost in a state that went to Biden by 10 points. I don't want that to happen to me. And so Josh Shapiro in Pennsylvania, he was up by double digits in the polls. Doug Mastriano started calling Josh Shapiro a hypocrite on school choice because Josh Shapiro went to private school. And Josh Shapiro, right before the election in 2022, he included private school choice in his platform, even went on Fox News reiterating his support in 2023. He ultimately caved to the unions. He ultimately vetoed his own campaign promise. That's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it works out for him. But the point is, now we have high-profile Democrats at least feeling pressure to signal public support for school choice, something that the teachers' unions hate more than anything else. And so the political winds are shifting towards our favor. And in Louisiana, for example, they passed with supermajority vote, universal school choice, all families eligible, Milton Friedman's vision coming to fruition right before our very eyes. And guess what? They didn't need any Democrat votes, but 20% of the Democrats in their caucus voted for it on the House floor. So that's great news. It's not 100% like I'd like, but 20% is better than 0%. And we also had some other Democrats actually switch parties. Sitting legislators in Georgia and North Carolina switched to the GOP on school choice. So this is the right thing to do, but it's also becoming more and more of a political winner because for far too long in K-12 education, the only unions represented the employees, the adults in the system. But guess what? The kids now have a union of their own. They're called parents, and they're holding politicians accountable, finally.
That's really nice. So look, what are we seeing for 2020? I just like the way you put that. I've heard you say that before, but I find it very moving that, you know, the way you put it, parents looking out for their children. What are we looking at for 2024? Will this decide races? Is it important nationally? Is President Trump talking about school choice?
Trump's excellent on school choice. He talked about it a lot during his first term as well. And on the campaign trail, he's talked about, he obviously tweeted about my book and talked about how he wants every family to have school choice. Joe Biden's a total hypocrite on the issue. He went to private school, sent his kids to private school, and then he pulls up the ladder from behind himself and tries to fight against school choice for everybody else. So Trump, look, he can get even more votes if he leans into this even harder because Biden's a total hypocrite on the issue. Let's make him pull himself a Terry McAuliffe and tell parents that they shouldn't have a say in their kids' education. In 2024, we expect Louisiana is going to be the 12th state now with universal school choice. Before 2021, there was zero states with universal school choice. Wow. So it's hard to overstate how much winning we're doing. We've had more wins in the past 3 years in the school choice movement than we've had in the preceding three decades. It is an insane amount of victories. And again, it's because they didn't have to fight to keep the schools closed. It became a GOP litmus test issue, and now red states are behaving like the laboratories of democracy that the founders envisioned. And guess what? In my home state, we now have the votes for universal school choice. We picked up 14 seats in the primaries, and we only needed 13 more votes, which again, 13 is a significant amount of pickups against incumbents. Incumbents usually win their reelection about 95% of the time. That didn't happen in Texas. They thought that they were more powerful than they actually were. They thought they were untouchable, but the parents and the voters weren't having it, and they kicked them out of office. And now we have a more conservative school choice majority in Texas for the first time in history in the House. So it's going to get done. And guess what? Texas has about 5.5 million children. That's more than 10% of school-age children. 5.5 million is more than 10% of the total school age population in the country. And so this is why the unions fight to protect the Texas monopoly as hard as possible. They know once Texas comes, more states will follow the trend as well.
Corey, you are you're on the winning team, and you've been driving the ball downfield. Fantastic. I mean, you're saying since 2021, all that movement. Look, I want to congratulate you and I want to thank you for being here today. And I want to recommend, audience, please, The Parent Revolution. Fantastic, really important book, very funny book as well. Important stories and a very important cause. It is our future. Our students, our kids, our future. And as Corey DeAngelis says, they have a union. They have a union now, even stronger and more committed than teachers' unions. And that's parents. That's all of you out there. Corey, thank you so much for being here today. God bless you. Congrats on the book. We'll see you again soon. And thanks to all of you for watching Words That Matter. We'll see you in the next episode. I'm Lee Smith.
You know, a 16-year-old girl who has undergone an attempted gender transition. She's gone on testosterone for years and got a double mastectomy and then realizes that this was a mistake, that she can't actually become another gender. To go back to her doctor and tell the doctor this was all a mistake is kind of akin to going back to an abuser that has hurt you very much and saying, hey, you abused me and I didn't like it and I'm just letting you know that I'm done with you abusing me. The doctors who are involved in this organization were aware that some of the testosterone hormones they're giving to girls were causing tumors. They were also aware that the young patients couldn't fully informed consent to these procedures since they were struggling from severe mental health issues. And they were aware that some patients were losing their fertility when they were taking testosterone. And yet none of them talked about this. And to the world, what they're saying is gender-affirming care is vital for the safety and well-being of young people. And denying this care to them is dangerous and is going to hurt them. And that's the messaging that we hear from the Biden White House, from the Department of Health and Human Services. That's the messaging we hear from the Department of Education, from all major medical organizations, which cite WPATH's expertise, even though WPATH is internally acknowledging that these types of things are experimental.
What happened to the medical profession? What happened to the media? What happened to the Biden White House? Please make sure and come back with us. Make the jump exclusively to Epoch TV.